where the unions that are part of the AFL-CIO and the unions that are part of Change to Win can coordinate efforts, make sure we're not duplicating efforts, and absolutely make sure that we can make workers' voices heard in this election cycle.
On a national level, the AFL-CIO and Change to Win have had a hard time seeing eye to eye since the split last year. Change to Win's Carol Florman says the election year coordination between the two federations is a good start.
There has been continued work together and cooperation at the local and the state level. So what's new here is that this is the first time that Change to Win and the AFL-CIO are collaborating at a national level.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
In his reform bid to replace James Hoffa as president of the Teamsters, Oregon Teamsters official Tom Leadham's grassroots campaign collected 55,000 petition signatures in a little over 4 weeks. At the Detroit Labor Notes conference, Leadham said his campaign is about restoring real worker power. Leadham accuses Hoffa of celebrity business unionism that has failed to deliver strong contracts and pensions for Teamsters.
Picket lines have been replaced with PR. Members and officers are reduced to groupies. We're passive spectators in our own union. This is a complete U-turn from the course the Teamsters took in the 1990s when we broke organized crime's stranglehold on our union and went to work rebuilding Teamster power based on rank-and-file power.
Leadham has a more complex agenda, but he says it really comes down to this.
We need to keep fighting the boss.
And Leadham says rebuilding worker power on the job is the way to really do that.
Here is today's economic report. What's more American, a Ford Mustang or a Toyota Sienna? If you look under the hood and beyond the name, you might be in for a surprise. New statistics from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and reported in Thursday's Wall Street Journal show that the Sienna, assembled in Indiana, contains 90% North American parts. On the flip side, the Mustang, an American icon, is assembled with 45% of its components coming from abroad.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Australia, and over on the other side of the planet is my best mate, Bruce Birch. Welcome aboard, Bruce.
Hey, John. Good to hear you this week, man. You know, I've been missing you, man. You know, we've been having our flubs and ups and downs, and
well, not just that. We've been doing a lot of work about, you know, bringing the game up on this whole head on radio network thing, and speaking of that, as usual, we're chatting in the headonradionetwork.com chat room, and the proceedings, as usual, are brought to you via White Rose Society, streaming and archiving, and the Carpenters and Millwrights keep the lights on for us. Thank you very much, boys, building the American dream every day. And yeah, it's been just such an insane week, Bruce, there's been so much news, but yet we got kind of like something juicy and fresh yet, don't we?
Oh, my goodness, do we ever. It is, yes, we do, John. And, you know, I think it's going to be an interesting story. We'll cover that, though, going into our second segment tonight. Let's go ahead and give out our emails and our how people can get on the program and all that good stuff, John, if you would be so kind.
Right on. Well, you can email us at bruce@fourthestateradio.com or bruce@brucebirch.com, or you can get me at John, J-O-N, at fourthestateradio.com. We're chatting, as I said, in our chat room at headonradionetwork.com. Click on the chat link. There's a little register thing. No big deal. You're straight in. And as usual, you know, you're obviously on the stream if you're hearing this. If not, go to the Listen Live page and log on. But anyway, do dreams actually come true? Is Fitzmas actually going to arrive, Bruce? Is this what I'm hearing?
I think it's very possible, John. I think it's very, very possible that this could happen in the next few days. And we'll talk about that some. But before we do that, I just wanted to cover one of the other stories that's sort of like busting loose at the seams. And that is this whole NSA spying thing. I mean, you know, everyone's been talking about this, and this has been all the rage and all the political talk shows, et cetera. But there's a twist that's coming up this week, John. Have you heard about this?
Please do tell. Do tell.
Well, the twist is that there is apparently a former NSA staffer that is going to be testifying in front of the Armed Services House Armed Services Committee, and according to a story from rawstory.com, he is going to be saying that the NSA has not only been listening in on our phone calls and checking out our emails, but has also been using satellite technology to spy on Americans.
Sorry, I listen to you read these things, man, and my brain just starts doing the math. And I remember now while I was busy yesterday and vaguely hearing Mike Malloy in the background, and this must have been what he was talking about, you know. I guess he was talking about something, you know, him throwing the ball with his two-year-old on the street, and that's what they're, like, probably going in and seeing, you know. I mean, like, is this really seriously where we're at? I mean, we knew, a lot of us kind of knew this already. But I mean, you know, they're you know, I don't care what that little liar says. They're trolling. You know, they're trolling for information. You know, and then, you know, you add satellite technology onto it, you know. Like, am I supposed to be looking out the window here and sitting there looking for what might be stationary in the sky? I mean, it just so screams Stalinist, man. It just so screams Stalinist. But please, please, enrage me more.
It seems to be that's my job these days. I don't know. It's like you know, just, John's all relaxed all through the week, and then he comes to Fourth Estate Radio Show, and then I get on the air, and it's like, just tears him off pieces. But, yes, there is more to the story. And, well, you know, it's just, you know, one of the revelations that came out this past week was that apparently over 100 million people in the United States have been affected by this, okay? Bell South, Verizon, trying to think of the other major phone carrier, AT&T. All three of those huge phone companies were apparently giving away their caller data, just giving it away to the government without subpoenas, without warrants, without any kind of legal maneuvering or you know, requirement. They just gave it away. Now, there is a silver lining to this. Quest Communications, based in Colorado, refused to give up information.
Right.
So,
they're being the Google in this situation, like it happened with the search engine people. They're not bending over easily. And I hear now that there's also some counter-suing going up against Verizon and Comcast, I guess it is, for having actually breached privacy laws.
Yes, there is a couple of lawsuits. I think there's also and related to all of this, yeah, there's those two lawsuits with Verizon. I think there's a couple of major entities that are suing Verizon. But in the middle of all this, the Electronic Frontier Foundation is also suing the United States government for for this illegal wiretapping, snooping, trolling, whatever the hell you want to call it. And the U.S. government filed a brief, I think it was yesterday afternoon or today, this morning, that basically said, you know, to dismiss the case because, in the interest of national security, they couldn't release the data. Or just, you know, it's getting deeper and deeper. We don't want to give it up, you know, the information, so therefore we'll classify it. And that'll keep them at bay for a while, is basically the idea behind that. But
you really, really follow this, Bruce. If you follow it, just what you've been saying, it's just kind of like you listen to it and the absurdity of it. You just kind of sit there and your spine starts to twist as you try and follow it. It's just like, oh, wait a minute! You just started here. You went. You're back where you came from without going anywhere. This is insane. And at the same time, we have all this stuff going on with the net neutrality as well. And unfortunately, we haven't really even talked about that on this show. I've wanted to. It's just this, what is it with the telecommunications? How much business do they have up in front of Congress or something that is making them so easily ready to bend over?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because, you know, John Conyers, who has been the leading progressive congressman, has added 72 other congressmen to a list of people that want answers and are actually demanding, I think at this point, that a special prosecutor be appointed to deal with the NSA spying scandal. What is most, I think, strange to me is that in this era of, you know, this party, this political party that is in charge, that has all three houses of government, the executive, the legislative, and the judicial branches of government, and is supposed to be the party of small government, is supposed to be the party of less government, less intrusiveness, has taken, even in Ronald Reagan's time and even in George the Elder's time, you know, has taken this government and has made it huge. I mean, it just amazes me, you know. And then Bill Clinton came along and actually downsized government a bit. And then, you know, here comes George Bush again, and what does he do but create a brand new department and then turns around and increases government even more so that, you know, one in three Americans is affected by this NSA wiretapping scandal. That is a real number. That's not a BS number pulled out of somebody's butt. That's a real number, John. And that is scary.
Okay. And if you just believe in you know three lines of separation with anything, that means that basically, if you're not being spied on, someone you know is being spied on.
Yes. There's no way
it's
you can
that avoid simple.
It. If you know more than two people, you're bound to know someone whose telephone calls have been intercepted. And have been, have been trolled through using electronic sniffing devices of some sort to detect certain words, I guess is the best way to put that, because it's all going through a huge switch somewhere. It's downright or. Which is fine with me, John. No, go ahead.
Did you say something about it being Orwellian? I think I just had a major bit of internet gap there. Sorry.
Yes, I did.
That's exactly where I was. This is just so Orwellian? It's not even funny.
Well,
Stalinist is actually what I really, really keep. It's got that vibe of. You know, we now have the party, but I don't know if maybe just because it's America and we have all this technology, it's a little harder to make it so cut and dry, the lying. You know, it's a pretty hard dance to keep this up, you know?
It is, John. Absolutely. And, you know, as time goes on, we're going to see this envelop, you know, unenvelop, I guess is the best way to put it. You know, and the other thing, too, is that we'll be talking about this here in just a few more minutes, but there's a couple of late breaking stories we're going to discuss this evening, but not the least of which is the spying scandal. We really want, I'd love to hear some telephone calls from people who aren't enraged by the spying scandal. If you are not enraged by this, if you think this is okay, I shouldn't have said that. One person out of, you know, and the interesting thing, the phone lines are lighting up, as we speak. But John, before we get to over to the phones there, you know, the Washington Post came out with a poll directly following the revelations that one in three Americans is being spied on.
Oh, okay, because I had only heard the one that came out right before all this revelation, which was 29%, right?
Right, right. Well, there was one that came out right after that, or like the I don't know how they did it. It was like the next day. But they apparently interviewed 1,003 adults, and 65%, according to that poll, 65% were in favor of this wiretapping. Well, now this is changing. Now this is you know, the people are actually beginning to go, okay, now wait a minute, this is a little too much. We can't do this. So it's kind of you know, people are beginning to wake up a little bit and going, okay, the inherent dangers are this. They're thinking about it and going, I don't like this idea. So,
well, yeah, it's getting to be a little bit, you know, too apparent for even the most denying person to not have to take a serious step back and say, you know, wait just a second. You know, there was a really interesting thing about Americans and freedom on Australian television. I'll talk about that later, but we're just about up on a break. And I do believe we have Jim waiting on line one, so just hang tight there, man. And you're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. It's Saturday night on the Head On Radio Network. This is John and Bruce. We'll be back just after this. Hit it, Agnes.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
You know why your head swivels on your neck? So you can share the road with motorcycles. Watch for bikes when you drive and help make this a safe riding season. A message from this station in the AMA. On the web at amadirectlink.com.
Been to the playground lately? If you have young children, you should take a look. Even though kids have been swinging and climbing and teetering for generations, playgrounds still manage to injure 500,000 kids each year. Check for hard landing surfaces, sharp edges, and broken equipment. Outdoor play is healthy for kids, but a playground that's unsafe and unsupervised can quickly become the pain ground. For more on playground safety, visit orthoinfo.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons.
All right, you're back on Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch, and my friend, my pal, my buddy, my best mate, John Fox, is down under in Sydney, Australia. John, you back with us now?
G'day, mate. G'day. I reckon we should just go straight to the phones. Jim's been holding on since before we went to the break. And you can get on the show. You can get on the program. Talk about what you want to talk about. Talk about this spying database garbage at 1-877-4 head on. And numerically, that's what, Bruce?
1-877-443-2366.
So, Jim, you there? Welcome to Fourth Estate Radio.
Good evening. How are you?
Oh, good, man. How you been?
I'm pretty well.
Doing great, Jim.
Reasonably well. I'm just on my couch with my cat sitting on my leg and watching TV, but I thought I would just make this comment about all this spying and stuff like that. You know, since Gorgeous George up there in D.C. has decided to wiretap everybody and get everybody all this information, that he's got a new title. You know what it is?
What's that?
He's the nation's chief bugger.
Chief bugger. I like it. I like it.
That isn't lost on our friends on the other side of the pond, but, you know, I think that would be a good title, don't you?
Yeah, the other one that I actually like, the other one that that I actually like that we've applied to him is Australians like to refer to useless people as oxygen thieves.
Well, yeah. But like I say, I thought, you know, that he is our country's chief bugger. And I will tell you, better watch out. All this buggery, like they used to say in the Middle Ages, will cause earthquakes, so they better watch out.
Yeah, no kidding. And what was just fascinating to watch him in that footage of all the denial of, you know, we are not trolling. You know, you just look at his eyes and he's straining to not show any of the twitching that his soul is doing over the fact that he's lying out his arse.
Well, I like
he's a good Christian though.
The word troll, because, you know, I just wonder which bridge he used to guard.
No doubt. The bridge over troubled water.
I guess so. But, you know, I just happen to think of that. Why, I don't know. I have a favorite British comedy called Yes Minister. I don't know if you're
familiar
with
it. Ah, that's a great show.
Are you?
They show that down here in Australia on the ABC. It's a great show.
I do, too. And, you know, it does remind me an awful lot of government and the way things are going. It really does, particularly Humphrey. He's just a classic. And I'm real sorry to hear the cat that they had named Humphrey died, because Humphrey was sort of like a, you know, a national treasure over there, I would think.
Well, yeah, Bruce, if you've never seen it, just kind of imagine if Fawlty Towers decided to do a version of the Prime Minister in the UK.
What's the name of this again?
A bit more serious. Yes, Minister. It's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Minister. I have not seen it.
Yes.
Oh,
it's
really
absolutely brilliant. It's
some
hysterical.
Some of the Britcoms are just wonderful. They really are. Last of the Summer Wine, Keeping Up Appearances, and of course, Waiting for God. I love those old people. I really do.
Are you being served?
Are you being served? I mean, yeah. And, you know, what can you say? But I just thought that'd be a good title for George Bush and all his cronies, the Bugger in Chief. That's what
the
he
bugger
was.
In chief.
The Bugger in Chief. I like it.
Oh,
I do like
it. It has a certain ring to it, yes.
Well, listen, I'll tell you what. If you guys are coming near where I am, you might want to bring me a manicotti with a file in it.
Okay, what do you reckon they're going to pick you up for?
Who knows? Who knows? Who knows?
We may end up being cellmates, Jim. You never know.
You snore?
Yes, I do. Do you?
Well, I guess if you get some gun cotton or something to put in your ear, but I don't know. It just seems like it's our intelligence services have so much more on their plate than to, you know, try to surveil conversation, phone conversation. I mean,
yeah.
If they surveil half of mine, they'd probably want to put me in an institution somewhere. You know, that's fine. Because, I mean, I just have, you know, I have a lot of crazy talk on the phone, which is just fun with friends that I have. And it's gotten to the point that it's almost laughable. You have to laugh or you go cry. So what are you going to do? What can you say, you know?
Well, I wonder, you know, aside from, you know, the fact that it's just completely unconstitutional and goes against, you know, everything America should be about, it just seems to me like an amazing, massive waste of energy. You know, I would think that putting that same kind of energy into actual, I don't know, trying to find Osama bin Laden, you know, instead of just this trolling idea, you know, it can only be to find dissenters and to try and put a bit of fear in the dissenting population, which is becoming closer to the majority of the population now.
Well, I'm sure J. Edgar Hoover would look up or look down from wherever he is and smile on this because, I mean, hell, he did this during 7 administrations, and he used to play the tapes at parties, you know, when he was getting dressed. Was Hoover a topher in all of them? So he used to like to get up and dress.
Say again?
Say it again, Jim.
I didn't catch that.
I said, you know, Hoover used to like to get up and drag. That's what I understand. And I don't know if
he's
for an autumn, but God knows the fact that J. Edgar Hoover playing tapes for people in their bedrooms while he was getting his dress on or whatever, it's just a thought that I can't even handle. I mean, I've heard you guys.
Oh, man.
But I mean, can you imagine Hoover in drag?
Well, he must have been a very solid woman, Jim. Very solid.
Fellas, he was so solid that they buried him in a lead casket, and he had 8 armed servicemen carry him off the Capitol steps, 6 of whom sustained a rupture.
You're kidding.
Hospital. But he was put away in a solid lead casket.
Oy. That's insane.
Wow.
That's incredible.
Crazy.
Right there.
Well, the bugger,
he's buried there. But anyway,
well, I love it. I do.
Offer really, but I just thought I would throw that out. Maybe to get somebody
right on, man.
Whatever, you know.
Thanks for ringing in the bugger in chief, or what was it? Chief buggery was what you said the first time. I kind of like that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, the chief bugger or whatever. And like I say, with all this buggering going around this country, we better watch out for earthquakes because that's what they said used to cause them back during the Middle Ages. You know.
Right on, Jim. Thanks for ringing in with that. We'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, gentlemen.
Nah, that's all right. Thanks a lot for that.
Out here.
Thanks, Jim.
Hey, man. Chief Buggery. I do kind of like it.
You know what I like better?
Kind of come up with a car. What?
The Bugger in Chief. Just really.
Bugger in Chief.
I mean, could you imagine? He's the one who orders all the other buggers around. You go over there and bugger that. Okay.
You know, I sit here. It's a good thing. I was saying. Say again?
I said it's a good thing this is after 10 o'clock, right? The kiddies are all in bed now.
Well, yeah. Well, this is true, all depending on where you are. But
oh, that's true.
I've told you about that. There's this great little Australian show here that's kind of like their version of The Daily Show called The Chaser's War on Everything. And they have a segment where they have a guy in the United States, and he does some sort of really, really, really funny kind of thing in America and goes and gets clips. So he decided to see if he could go out and find an American that could say freedom more times in one interview than George Bush said in the last State of the Union address. And it was really interesting. All the white people they went to, when he asked, what's great about America? You know, it was like, freedom of speech. And you hear the Australian audience just laughing, right? Freedom of this, freedom of that. And then people get stuck up. Then they came across a group of young African-American guys out in front of some cinema somewhere. And the guy says, I'll tell you what freedom is. And he goes off on this thing, is freedom is able to do what you want when you damn well want. Blah, 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 all this kind of thing. Starts talking about what, and he said, and that ain't America. And he says, and George Bush, suck my
Goodness gracious.
And I was just like, woo! And he was just, and it was this young guy, and all of a sudden he realized he had a second to say something. And he reeled off this thing, but it was like, all the white people went, America's great because of freedom. And then you get to the rest of the population. And freedom had nothing to apply with what was going on. It was quite funny, but we're coming up on a break, I hear. So, Bruce, we got to take this little thing and go to the next half hour, as we normally do. And we'll come back. We got to talk about Rove. I want to talk about my favorite band, Tool, and a few other things. So come on back with Fourth Estate Radio on the other side of this break with Bruce and John Fox.
Fight childhood asthma, then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle. For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Introducing Pablo Escobar. Trained at the School of the Americas. Another day making hay up in Hollywood. Execution of the main informant.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. John Fox here in Sydney, Australia. Bruce Perch is up in North Carolina. We are chatting at the Head-On Radio Network chat room and blogging at headonradionetwork.com. We didn't actually get a blog post up in time for today, but hey, these things happen. So,
well, maybe we
Bruce.
Did a break or something.
Yeah,
John!
I'm tossing it to you.
All right, tossing it over, yes, of course. All right, well, wait a minute, what am I doing? Gosh, that just sort of came out of
I don't know, you told me to bring it in and toss it to you. I'm just following orders, eh?
All right. All right, matey. Well, you know, before we do have callers on the line, so please just hold on. We'll get to you as fast as possible. But before we get over to you guys, I wanted to throw this out there. This is actually something that was mentioned by a caller in the Cup of Joe radio show earlier tonight. But we felt it kind of needed to have a little bit better coverage. And before we get into that, though, wanted to sort of preface it with a bit of music.
Agnes, please.
I had a friend named Ramblin' Bob. He used to steal, gamble, and rob. He thought he was the smartest guy around. Well, I found out last Monday that Bob got locked up Sunday. They've got him in the jailhouse way downtown. He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now. Well, I told
him. Very, very close.
Yeah. How? Who else could we talk about hearing that song? I think, ladies and gentlemen, you probably know who we're talking about. It would be the illustrious, the evil genius, Dr. Evil himself, Karl Rove. Let me read this to you, and then, John, you just tell me what you think about this. Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald spent more than half a day Friday at the offices of Patton Boggs, the law firm representing Karl Rove. During the course of that meeting, Fitzgerald served attorneys for former Deputy White House Chief of Staff Karl Rove with an indictment charging the embattled White House official with perjury and lying to investigators related to his role in the CIA leak case, and instructed one of the attorneys to tell Rove that he has 24 hours to get his affairs in order, high-level sources with direct knowledge of the meeting said Saturday morning. John, your reaction.
I love the whole concept of, you know, you have 24 hours to get your life kind of tied together, son, because your life could be changing. I am so into the idea of seeing that sweaty, little, maniacal son of a bitch go down. I cannot wait.
He is kind of a sweaty character, isn't he? He's like the guy who sweats sitting still, you know? It's just, oh, my goodness. But I want to bring that to attention. And actually, just to sort of follow up on this a little bit, if you want to know more about this story, go to the Head On Radio Network. Or Jason Leopold, I'm going to credit him with finding this, putting it together, this article, Jason Leopold at truthout.org. John, you want to head over to the phones now, or...?
Yeah, if memory serves me right, we had Luke on line one. Is that correct, Agnes?
Well, Luke, how are you doing, buddy?
Say, on the story y'all just reported was, let's get Joe Wilson his lawn chair and his and a drink to sit there on the lawn and wait for the them to come take Carl away.
You know, Joe Wilson, seriously, I hope memory just remembers him. You know, I hope history remembers him as truly being a hero.
Well,
because he's sat, yeah.
Well, the thing of it is, every time you hear one of these right-wingers, they still try to tell the story that, you know, everything he said over there was been disproven by the Senate. It's like, guys, that was the Republican Senate's report. The Democratic Senate's report was a little different. You know, and every time I hear him talk about Joe Wilson, that's the first thing they start crying is, oh, everything he found over there was disproved. It's like, no, it wasn't.
And I always like to go back to the fact that George I wrote a letter to his own wife saying that he wished there were more people in public service like Joe Wilson because the world would be a better place.
Hey, before we get into the NSA story, can I mention a couple stories that have been sliding under the radar as usual around here?
Please do.
Sure. One was this story about this guy. They're rushing through the Senate named Brett Kavanaugh. I think he was the Buzzflash hypocrite of the week. But this guy,
yeah.
They're putting him through there just so they'll have somebody on their side on the D.C. Court of Appeals.
Yes.
So this guy is not doesn't even have any judge experience as any kind of a judge, and they're putting him on the second highest court in the land.
I don't even think he's an attorney, is he?
Like I say, he's a White House staffer, I think is what they listed him as.
Yeah.
Like a White House staff secretary or something like that, because they had the confirmation hearings or whatever, the things in the Judicial Committee was on C-SPAN this evening. And I was sitting there listening to it, and it's like you say, it sounds like this guy, his main thing about being, his main qualification is the fact that he was apparently one of the yes men who worked for between the Republicans and Ken Starr in the 90s. That was part of his job. But and the other one was, did you all see the video? It was probably earlier this week of the Iraqi army that when they were told they weren't going to be sent to their own provinces, were stripping off their uniforms because they didn't want to go to
there was
other
a huge,
areas.
Yeah, it was a huge case of hell no, we won't go when they found out they weren't going to be protecting their own homes.
I saw that video maybe once, maybe twice, and that's it. I mean, God, that video should have been leading the news. It's like, guys, these are the people that they're saying are going to protect the Iraqis. I mean, it was beyond ridiculous.
Well, there was also a story this week too, Luke, where the Shiite and Kurd members of the Iraqi army were fighting each other.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
you know, I mean, they literally had drawn guns and were shooting at each other. They're both on the same side and they're shooting at each other. So, you know, that whole debacle.
How is this not a civil war, Bruce?
Well, the thing
I still keep asking that. How?
Go ahead, Luke.
Well, the thing was something about where they'd had some wounded soldiers and they'd taken them to the hospital, and I can't remember which group it was, but one of the groups started firing their guns in the air trying to clear the people so they could get their guy up first to be taken care of.
Right.
And apparently the other groups came over, and they essentially were pointing at each other, and it's sort of like, you know, the other group finally left.
Well, the Kurds left with their militia guy who was wounded and, you know, trying to take him to another hospital, and apparently the Shiite militia guys were trying to keep them from leaving at the time. So it was kind of like, yeah, it got really hairy there. And of course, the Iraqi police version of what happened and the United States Army version of what happened were two totally different things.
Oh yeah. But getting on, I guess the NSA. I know you've got plenty of people, and I don't want to take up too much time. I just wonder, all these reporters that are reporting this story is not too serious. It's like, gee, I wonder what happens when they start thinking about, oh, by the way, all of our guys who we talk to, who give us leads, their numbers are in that computer database. So, like, if I want to know who David Gregory's talking to, I can pull up his records and see who he's talked to and who's been talking to him. So if I want to find out who a whistleblower is, there's a list of numbers. And if I know there's a whistleblower in some department, I just start going down the list.
Exactly. And, you know, and something about that, too, that really gets under my skin is that, there, you know, knowing this, knowing that this happened and knowing that, you know, one in three Americans perhaps have been wiretapped or trolled or whatever you want to call it, obviously some of those were political candidates, had to have been. Okay?
Well, like
and
said,
I'm wondering.
Every time John Kerry went to someplace and picked up a cell phone, somebody had to be hearing it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's exactly what I'm thinking is that, you know, I mean, there were allusions made about that probably 6 months after the election, you know. So, I mean, but there wasn't any hard evidence. Well, here's your hard evidence. if they're spying on Mr. and Mrs. Smith in Heartland America, you know doggone well they're spying on the other side in a political campaign.
Well,
you know,
there's
no way around.
Well, you know, like I always talk about, I've heard people talk about, you know, the no-fly list. You know who one of the people on the no-fly list is, don't you?
Isn't the gentleman who wrote the book called Bush's Brain, right?
No, yeah, well, this fellow named Al Gore. You know, he's he can fly, but it's one of those things where every time he goes through, the flag goes off.
Oh, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. So, you know what I mean? It's one of those things, the way that is used, I mean, it's like I say, you know, they don't bring it up much, but, you know, this whole thing goes back to remember right after 2000, after September 11th, this whole TIA, the Total Information Awareness. That's all this is. They just, you know, when they said they shut it down, they didn't. They just did like they did for the School of the Americas. They just changed the name.
Well, they changed the name, and I dare say that probably the same people who were involved in the TIA, John Poindexter, who was previously of the Iran-Contra fame, was probably involved. I mean, you know, the cast of characters hasn't changed. It's the name. It's the names that are, you know, that I'm sorry. Not it's you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The names of what they're doing and where they are and the places that they're in the government. You know, these guys are the same folks who were around during Reagan's time, and you know, when Reagan didn't know what was going on or claimed he didn't know. So truly crazy.
Well, I'm gonna let you guys go on. I know you got more people to talk to. But like I say, it's
right on, man.
Like,
thanks.
Just keep on it. And like I say,
we will, man. We
and one thing, I think every time we hang up the phone, I always remember to say Bin Laden. So that way, so the computers click off, just drive it nuts.
Anthrax.
Alrighty. See y'all. Bye.
All right, man. Have a good night.
Thanks, Luke. That's our good friend Luke from Knoxville, Tennessee, and it looks like we're. I could be completely wrong, but I think we're hammering up on a break here, or shortly anyway.
Yes.
You are listening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch. I am Bruce. That's John. If you want to get in on the program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there.
with the golf, the bald guy.
You know, maybe they can do a, you know, a UAE version of my grandmother is also my lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Let's go back to the phones, and we are joined by Beauregard T. Clampett, I'm told, on line one.
Hi there, Bob.
Well, Mr. Clampett, how are you, sir?
The sponsor, you have had a ruckus on the airwaves this evening, Bob, and I just got to tell you where I fall down on this subject.
And fall down you do, I suppose.
So you catch on quick, I tell you. Very quick, very quick. But I did want to just, because I kept hearing things like amnesty, and I've had to tell you, Bob, if we have amnesty, we can't work them to death like we're doing. We can't pay them $3 an hour if we let them become citizens now, can we?
That whole 13th Amendment thing's still a thorn in your side, isn't it?
We won't talk about that either, Bob. Now, we're working on repealing that sucker, but it's going to take a while.
Catch Bob Kincaid weeknights, 7 to 10 p.m., right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Good man underground.
Head On.
You're back. All right, everybody. Radio. There's John. Hey, John, we're back, and you're back. And if you want to get on the radio program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366, or you can alternatively, you can send email to john@fourthestateradio.com or bruce@fourthestateradio.com, either or. You can, you know, we'll forward it to each other, or you can send it to both of us at the same time. And I'll bet you it'll get either place as quick. So. Gosh, Karl Rove, man, what do you think about that, man? You know, we've been waiting for this one for a while, though. I think, you know, it's
and I'm kind of curious to find out what how far it'll go, because that in the piece that was at Truth Out, it's about lying to investigators and whatnot. Hopefully this will just be the beginning of opening the can of worms on this guy, because I mean. He has been key in the manipulation of our democracy over the last, 6 years. And, you know, from, you know, fake bugs in campaign offices to, you know, leaking cocaine information to biographers just so that they could, you know, try and discount it and all that. All this just manipulation of what gets out there. And the cutthroat tactics that he, you know, took what Strauss was all about and brought it up to the psychotic level. We've been waiting a long time for this, because a lot of people have been damaged because of this character. And why is someone who's so corrupt thought of so highly by so many? I just find that troubling, man.
Well, I think it's there. I think personally, I don't hold him in very high regard. I think he's a sweaty little cretin. But I think those on the right that revere Karl Rove revere him because he is the one that has sort of that is the architect of the Bush administration's rise to power, and you know. He is probably the primary reason why this administration doesn't govern so much as it goes from one campaign to the next. I mean, in each one of their little debacles that has gone on, you know, little debacles like NSA wiretapping, you'll see that the way they trot out George, they don't trot him out to deal with it or to try to, you know, address the situation. They trot him out to start a new campaign. I mean, it's like with the Social Security thing. He went running around the country and he tried to sell, you know, sell this new program. And in reality, you know, it was a campaign. It was not where he was trying to, you know, address an issue or whatever, you know, or he wasn't governing. I mean, he was trying to sell. And maybe that's the biggest thing is that, you know, Rove has created Bush as being the master door-to-door salesman, you know?
Well, yeah, exactly that. You know what, you're just going to pull you off a second. When
sure.
Bush was out just recently talking about the Medicare Part D thing, he was referring to the people as consumers.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, it is this artful control of language and that, you know, everything that, it's not making policy. It's selling an idea. And the substance, as we found out, represents nothing of what the idea that was sold in most cases.
Well, and that's just it, is that, you know, I was kind of hoping we might get a call from the decider tonight, because if we do get a call from the decider, I have a few questions I like to ask him, like how did you decide today to tell that lie, that bald-faced lie about trolling? You know, here in the South, when we talk about trolling, it's a whole different kind of thing. We're stretching lines across the river to try to catch trout. But anyway, trolling for anyway.
Well, I mean that's basically what they're doing. You know, they're just I mean that is what they're doing. You know, they're going out with a big net, hoping that they'll find something. But that's not how you investigate things. You investigate things by following like actual leads. You know, Yeah, we've been waiting a long time for this, and I really, really, you know, I hope that he doesn't find some way of weaseling his way out, because I think he is the linchpin, you know, in the whole cabal. You know, he's orchestrated this thing, as you said, you know, created Bush, and the whole thing, you know, I don't think Bush and Cheney necessarily get along, but there's this long-term twisted objective that they all together want to reach, along with all the PNAC nut jobs, you know? And
yeah, the PNAC nut jobs. Well, you know, the other part of this, too, is that I'm thinking, okay, so we have this news today. Now, notice it's only on the Truth Out website, and I think there's a diary in the Daily Kos website. There doesn't seem to be anything in the mainstream media as of yet, and I think part of that is because there has been so much speculation surrounding this case that they want to make sure, without a shadow of a doubt, that this is actually what has happened. That Rove's lawyer actually confirms that this actually happened, because Rove's lawyer apparently has not responded to any media requests as of yet. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out on Monday. But go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, and Fitzgerald's just been playing very, very careful ball with all this. You know, he's not let much out because he doesn't want speculation to supersede what he's actually doing. And it seems like this is a guy that crosses every T and dots every I and, you know, and makes sure that it's bloody solid and nonpartisan. So, you know, I could see that, you know, he giving Fat Boy a bit of, you know, notice saying, you know, I suggest you get your affairs in order, son, because we're going to do a little bit of dancing here for a bit, you know.
Well, and I just wanted to mention also, there's actually, gosh, it's just, it amazes me how news can break, and it doesn't even matter what time of the day or if it's on the weekend or not. Stephen Lesser is now reporting that CNN is now reporting that Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald has now made two additional filings regarding Cheney's role in the scandal. While it is unclear as to whether or not Cheney will ultimately be charged or named, or, note this, ultimately be charged or named as an unindicted co-conspirator, The filings make clear that evidence will be presented regarding Cheney at the trial of Cheney's former chief of staff, Scooter Libby. Which tells me, just those two, that one word, charged or named as an unindicted co-conspirator. Not something else, but one of those two things. Okay, so you know what? This is breaking all over the place. This is kind of crazy. All right, but I wanted to say this before we get over to our top of the hour, and that is that George Bush is going to be going out and trotting out a speech on Monday night around 9 p.m. to talk about immigration. And I can't help but think, John, that speech is timed perfectly to try to dissuade people from paying attention to the whole Roe situation. You know.
And if it's not that, you know, he's got to go out and do something to detract attention from the whole, you know, phone tapping thing as well. But yeah, I mean, it would just play to their rule book, you know. I mean, that's just how they play it. Every time there's going to be bad news coming out against them, go out and make some sort of red herring, big noise over here, and nothing to see, nothing to see, nothing to see. You know. So I mean, we've seen this before, but like you said, yeah. It's an either or situation in that statement, which I would love to just see Cheney and be the next one indicted.
Yeah, I was going to say, and that was CNN reporting. That wasn't just some guy writing something on a blog. That was actually CNN reporting that. So, oh joy. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back here in a short little while. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch and everybody else who gets in on the radio program. If you'd like to call us, please do so. 1-877-443-2366. We'll be right back.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
This week, the country's two labor federations announced a tentative agreement to coordinate get-out-the-vote efforts for the midterm elections in 6 months. While no solid plans have been laid out, a committee will be created and headed by AFL-CIO Political Committee Chair Gerald McEntee and Change to Win Vice Chair Edgar Romney. The AFL-CIO's Lane Windham explained why there is a need for coordination.
We're going to work together. We're creating a National Labor Coordinating Committee where the unions that are part of the AFL-CIO and the unions that are part of Change to Win can coordinate efforts, make sure we're not duplicating efforts, and absolutely make sure that we can make workers' voices heard in this election cycle.
On a national level, the AFL-CIO and Change to Win have had a hard time seeing eye to eye since the split last year. Change to Win's Carol Florman says the election year coordination between the two federations is a good start.
There has been continued work together and cooperation at the local and the state level. So what's new here is that this is the first time that Change to Win and the AFL-CIO are collaborating at a national level.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
In his reform bid to replace James Hoffa as president of the Teamsters, Oregon Teamsters official Tom Leadham's grassroots campaign collected 55,000 petition signatures in a little over 4 weeks. At the Detroit Labor Notes conference, Leadham said his campaign is about restoring real worker power. Leadham accuses Hoffa of celebrity business unionism that has failed to deliver strong contracts and pensions for Teamsters.
Picket lines have been replaced with PR. Members and officers are reduced to groupies. We're passive spectators in our own union. This is a complete U-turn from the course the Teamsters took in the 1990s when we broke organized crime's stranglehold on our union and went to work rebuilding Teamster power based on rank and file power.
Leadham has a more complex agenda, but he says it really comes down to this.
We need to keep fighting the boss.
And Leadham says rebuilding worker power on the job is the way to really do that.
Here is today's economic report. What's more American, a Ford Mustang or a Toyota Sienna? If you look under the hood and beyond the name, you might be in for a surprise. New statistics from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and reported in Thursday's Wall Street Journal show that the Sienna, assembled in Indiana, contains 90% North American parts. On the flip side, the Mustang, an American icon, is assembled with 45% of its components coming from abroad.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Anyway, welcome back to everybody. This is John Fox. That's Bruce Birch typing badly in the production chat. And man,
I'm happy.
So am I. And I'm just kind of like I'm dying for Monday at this point. You know,
yes.
I'm kind of waiting for Monday. You know, start seeing. You know, to see Carl possibly frog marched.
we're talking the 16-point headline in the New York Times. That's what I'm looking for. The 16-point, or maybe even 24-point headline, depending on, you know. So I'm talking about the font size.
And you know, I mean, this guy, seriously, it's kind of like he is the treasure trove of the evil. You know, he is the connection of all of it that's been going on over the last few years. You know, this whole just pathetic concept of an administration is this whole shell has been, you know, or engineered from the bottom up by this guy. And, you know, I find it really sad to think that there is this portion of America that actually thinks that this guy was, you know, somehow good and constructive for America, which is just completely opposite world to the umpteenth to me.
Well, and I, you know, and actually, you know, in our production chat, the question was just brought up, and this is an interesting question. Maybe this is something that we can expound upon later, or somebody else calling into the program. I know we got some folks on hold, so just hang on 1 second. And that question is, in the Rove story, what does the 24 hours to get his affairs in order mean? What does that mean?
All depending on what they might be getting him for, you know, perjury, you can be detained for perjury.
Okay.
Until they get the truth out of you. How many times have you seen it in a cop show where someone's perjured themselves, refuses to testify, they lock them up for contempt until they get the truth out?
That could happen, but I I'm not thinking that's going to happen because of who it is. I mean, he's such a high profile guy, you know.
Well, maybe also the thing is that there is also some well documented history of the destruction of evidence, you know, regarding campaigns and things like that. You know, it may be a thing Fitzgerald wants to, you know, at least be able to put him under house arrest while they maybe get in to go get more evidence, and then we open up to the disclosure portion of a trial.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to say at this point. I mean, you know, obviously the story's out there. Something's going to happen this coming week for sure, you know. And CNN is now reporting that Cheney is mixed up in this even in a greater detail than any of us probably. Well, in our secret dreams, we might have hoped, but we wouldn't have spoken it out loud for fear of screwing it up. But it looks like Cheney may be also implicated in the middle of all this as well. So, hey, you know, it sounds like it could be a good weekend. If I had balloons, party balloons at kazoos, I would be blowing them and watching them dance around the room right now. But
I'm getting ready to order that helium tank.
Yes, helium. Oh, that's what you put in? I thought it was something. Anyway, all right, we're not going to talk about that. But I do understand we have Rob on line one. Rob, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Here's hoping.
Fantastic. What's on your mind?
Well, here's hoping that Fitzgerald is a news hog and he's going to blow this up like your balloon.
Yes.
I'm hoping that Well, what do you think tomorrow morning news shows are going to do? I think they're going to cover this at all?
Well, I think I'm thinking there's a possibility, mainly because of the fact that apparently CNN has picked up on this and is running some of it. Now, I haven't CNN yet this evening because I've been in the middle of trying to, you know, put together a radio show and all that kind of stuff. But according to a couple of articles that I've read, that there is it is running on CNN and. Because of that, you know, we may see somebody. We may see Late Edition with Wolf Blitzer cover it or something. Well, you know, we'll see.
Right. Well, let's hope anyway that, you know, I don't expect Fox to cover it very much, but you know, maybe Tim Russert will get in there a little bit. I'm not sure. He's been doing pretty good lately the last few weeks.
Has he?
Yeah, he's been
it's about time.
A little tougher than, you know, he's been – you know, over the last few years, anyway. Do you read Russert Watch on Huffington Post?
I confess to you that I do not,
okay.
Just because he reminds me too much of Karl Rove. But what have they been saying over there?
Well, they've commented on how he's actually kind of come alive over the last few weeks and actually asking difficult questions as opposed to the softballs that he normally gives any Republican anyway.
Could it be that they've lost their political capital, Rob?
I think that might just be something that we could discuss. I think it's one of the things that I do is I watch Hardball with Chris Matthews as a bellwether, as a way of determining how well or bad the Bush administration is doing in the news in general, because Chris Matthews is such how you want to put it. He loves the insider bit, and so if Bush is not doing well, he gets tough, and you know if Bush is doing well, he backs down, and so I watch Chris Matthews as a method of determining exactly what the inside Beltway people are thinking.
Well, I also reckon, you know, like if Russert's asking, you know, tough questions now, you know, it's way too little, way too late. Because I mean, he's been such a softball when it comes to this administration, you know, throughout for the most part. Even though he almost got twisted up in this plame thing, kind of, sort of, but not really, I reckon it's all about saving face, and that the market is finally starting to swing so much away from the president that even you're going to be seeing Murdoch starting to cover because he's a capitalist first.
Right.
As soon as it's not making money for him, you'll see the tone of it change.
Well, you did see that Murdoch held a fundraiser with Hillary Clinton. You guys see that?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I want to see nothing of Hillary when it comes to the ticket in 2008.
Oh, I know.
You know, I want nothing to do with it. And see, I think Murdoch would like to kind of, you know, keep that DLC kind of, you know, Republican vibe in if we have to go the other way.
Right.
Because that would be more friendly to him than a truly left liberal Democrat, you know, administration or Congress or whatever. But, you know, Murdoch knows where his butter, you know, where the butter comes from for his bread. You know, we saw what he did in China where he's, you know, made the whole big thing saying, I'm going to bring cable to China. It'll be bringing freedom to China. Well, then the Chinese suddenly didn't like what the BBC was saying. So, oh, we'll just remove the BBC World from the service. It's no big deal.
Sure.
You know, we will see the bootlicker media even after a point where it's undeniable out of their own wimpy fear turn coats on their own, I reckon.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
There was another issue that I kind of wanted to bring up, if you guys don't mind.
Sure, Rob.
And this is the candidate for the CIA, Michael Hayden, the general. Going up in front of this civilian agency in his military uniform. I mean, they didn't even have the decency to take the uniform off this guy, put him in a suit. What it makes me think about is the militarization of the U.S. government. We've seen this, and I, you know, Bruce, we've talked on your show about 9/11 quite a bit. And in one of the videos that I've seen, and it harkens back to the 2004 Republican convention and showing the police looking extremely much like the military in flak jackets, helmets, and carrying AK-47s instead of, you know, the image of the blue-coated or the blue-suited policeman with his baton and maybe a hand weapon. These images, I think, and I think this is a crucial one with Michael Hayden, is that we want to get used to seeing, you know, officials of the government who are not supposed to be military in uniforms. And I think that one of the things that Bush does is wear these quasi-military outfits and, you know, like, the flight suit when he landed on that aircraft carrier. But even more than
cod piece attached, yes.
Yeah, well, that was embarrassing. But but he wears these coats with the insignias, and, you know, it's reminiscent of Castro and other third world military dictators. But I think it's a gradual introduction of the American people to see civilian agencies led by the appearance of these military figures.
Well, I think it was all purely to make a statement.
Yeah.
You know, there is no civilian.
Right.
The army and the party and the military and the intelligence are all going to serve King George. And that's, you know, I mean, seriously, you know, I've said it over the last year or so, you know, how fascism is coming to America, you know.
Right.
And I actually, like, this is a big switch now, man. A big switch has been thrown with this. You now have it apparent that one-third of the U.S. population, approximately, is being actively having their records trolled through,
right?
To, you know, trawling through, trying to find anything on anyone, and I bet very little of it has to do with national security.
Well, absolutely. You know, we've been, and the reason I've been calling Bruce so much about the 9/11 stuff is I'm new to it. I had no clue. I felt like, you know, that this is really ridiculous until I watched World Trade Center number 7 collapsed, and I got a literal chill down my spine because I knew what that looked like. site that was controlled demolition. And so, you know, my world view changed at that point. And I kind of no longer trust the alternative media. I've turned to the alternative media, like that on radio and All Things Reconsidered.
Well, we're an alternative
radio.
We're an alternative to the alternative. That's kind of cool.
Exactly. but I've been, you know, I've been like a fan of Amy Goodman and Noam Chomsky, you know, these good liberals out there fighting the good fight, and I no longer believe that stuff, and I feel fooled by the so-called left when they can ignore something as incredible as 9/11 and not even, you know, have the slightest hint that something, and like you said, John, we're moving into a fascist era, and I believe that that's coming, and, you know, if we can't be concerned about that, if the left can't scream about that, what can they scream about?
Well, I hope to see more and more actual real Republicans standing up and saying, this is completely out of control. We've got no oversight here. This is not what this country is supposed to be about. And there's nowhere written anywhere in the Constitution where this, you know, all-encompassing executive power nonsense is even mentioned. And, you know, we got to reel these guys in, because you look at all the special projects prisons being built all over the country, and that one that can house 500,000 up in Alaska. I mean, we're not far from mass detentions. Where I'm going to be starting to really, really seriously worry about the next time I hear about Bruce going on a march.
And I agree with you. Now, I'd like a little more information on those, because I've seen those on the, well, as some websites are calling them, concentration camps. And I'd like to get back to, for a second, I want to talk about Ron Paul from Texas. He's a congressman, a Republican, who actually wrote an article called Police State USA. And he was talking about, you know, after the September 11th attacks, we really have to watch what the national government is doing and how it does. You know, government wants to expand. In general, government wants to expand their influence over the individual, and we have to be careful of that. It's, you know, this congressman probably disagrees with me on nearly every point, but this one we agree on. We have to be very careful about that. But these so-called concentration camps that are being built, do you have any more, you know, some websites I could go to, some articles I could look at?
I can do some. I'll tell you what, I'll go back months ago, and on our blog, which is in the midst of moving to a new home and is not online at the moment, we had some articles, and I'll find them again, and I'll get them up on the horn this week somewhere. Where it was actually statements from, I believe, the Appropriations Committee, talking about that they were building these facilities for so-called special projects. And
I remember specifically those story was broken in the Christian Science Monitor.
Okay.
So go check that out. Probably this is May. I would say, John, I would say definitely December, January.
Yeah, it was before the beginning of the year, but I'm being told that we need to take a break too. So we'll have to check up on that, because that there is no fuzziness about that. Those are real.
Right.
If that's what you're asking, those are real. They're being built as we speak.
Yeah,
have been for a couple of years now.
I was just looking for some more concrete information on it.
Well, we'll try to dig up some more information before the end of the show and see what we can pull off. And if we get a chance, we'll post it up on Head On Radio before the night's over with. But I have some links, I think, saved, too, so I'll check it out. But
I appreciate
Rob,
it.
Rob, thanks so much for calling tonight.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Bye. Have a great night.
Yep.
And you're listening to Fourth Estate Radio. This is Bruce Birch. That's John Fox. And if you want to get in on the radio program, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. We'll be right back.
Dog attacks and dog bites come in all sizes. Think your dog doesn't bite? Don't be so sure. Dog attacks are one of the nation's most commonly reported public health problems. Francia Smith, consumer advocate for the U.S. Postal Service.
With the summer heat and children out of school, the dog bite risk gets worse. But with a little care, dog owners can prevent most attacks and protect themselves, too, from the serious legal, financial, and emotional consequences that often result. Over half the dog bite victims are children. Any dog can bite for the first time, even with the owner there. So whether you are a dog owner or not, please take the time to learn about dog safety. Visit USPS.com and type the words dog bite into the search box for the links you need. You'll be glad you did.
This message is provided as a public service by this station and the U.S. Postal Service.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
Hello, this is Suffering the Odds, Mind Control Album Volume 1, Series 1. Welcome, stroke victim. Feel free to think for yourself. However, all independent actions from here out will be forbidden. You have had a stroke. Do not attempt to dance. Do not attempt to walk. Do not attempt to drive a car. Use the restroom alone or make a phone call. You will follow the instructions found on this record. Sit there silently and suffer the odds. Please turn the record over. Please turn the record over. Please turn the record over.
The odds are African Americans are twice as likely to suffer a stroke as white Americans. But there are steps you can take to help beat the odds. Call 1-888-4-STROKE or go to strokeassociation.org.
Join the power to end stroke.
Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Woke up this morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms.
That's right, I'm made of atoms and you're made of atoms, and we're all in this together on For the State Radio. Good to have you back on with us. It's going to be a sort of a quick little short segment here. John, you there, buddy?
Yeah, man. I am. And you found linkages for about the camps. Is that what you were telling me there in the production room?
Yes, I did. And I'm going to go ahead and read this URL all the way out so that people can write this down if they want to go check it out about the concentration camps that Rob was just talking about. And this is from the American, let's just see here. Hang on one second. I'll tell you. This is apfn.org, apfn.org/apfn/camps, C-A-M-P-S, camps, .htm. That's APN. You know what? I'm screwing up already, John. That's APFN apfn.org, apfn.org/apfn/camps.htm, camps, camps.htm. And this actually contains the actual Army documents, including the PDF files of, you know, about all of this. The FEMA concentration camps in America going back to 2001. The U.S. approves the use of the military against citizens, blah, 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 ad nauseum. It's all right there. Go check it out. And again, I'll post this link in our chat room here shortly just so that people can in the chat can also go and check that out. But we're going to do a real quick segment here, John. And I think the biggest thing that gets under my skin with this whole Rovian nonsense is that what we're finding, you know, is that the politics of misdirection right now, CNN is focusing on Cheney's role rather than Roe's role. Isn't that funny?
Well, I think it's because, you know, once Roe goes down, that is going to be, you know, just the it's that tip of the iceberg kind of thing. And I think that's when it's seriously going to start to fall apart for them, because do you see once Roe is in real trouble, him actually staying quiet? You know, I mean, I reckon he'll end up turning belly up and singing like a birdie.
Yeah. And let's
hope
so.
I mean, so. In the woods, save some butt, you know? I mean, that's all I can think of. But, you know, I just want to see him frog marched out. And, I just want to see this made official. And it's kind of like – it does feel like I haven't felt like Christmas in a long time, but this is the most I've felt like it in a long while. And we're coming up on – we got to take our bottom of the hour break, I do believe there, Bruce. And
yeah, we do. And those of you who are on the phones, just hang on. We'll be right to you in just a couple more minutes. I know it's sort of getting old here, but we'll get right to you. Just hang out.
We'll do it. So I do believe as we go out, this is – for you a little taste of the brand new Tool album, 10,000 Days. This is a song called Vicarious. See you on the other side.
Discussing child development with some experts. Tell me the normal development of, say, a 2-year-old.
My truck.
So a child that age should know 2 to 4-word phrases. Good. And what about cognitive development? Ah, engaging in pretend play. I see. And what of social
Look, Anna!
Being enthusiastic about the company of other children. All right, thank you.
It's time to change how we view a child's growth. It's not just physical. There are milestones your child should reach in how he plays, learns, speaks, and acts. A delay in any of these areas could be a sign of a developmental problem, even autism. The good news is, the earlier it's recognized, the more you can do to help your child reach his full potential. Talk with a doctor. Visit cdc.gov/act early or call 1-800-CDC-INFO. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Learn the signs. Act early.
I'm a sophomore at college this year, but when I was a sophomore in high school, I gave all my teachers a bad time. Most of them, I guess, just threw up their hands, except for my English teacher.
8 years teaching high school English, 10 years in recovery for alcohol addiction.
To be or not to be.
I got help.
That's it right there.
When you get help, who knows just who you'll help along the way.
For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph.
Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to. Well,
I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered. I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
Right, everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. This is John Fox in Sydney, Australia, Bruce Birch up in Greensboro, North Carolina. And Bruce Birch, as we wait to see if we still have callers on hold after all that kind of long segment, short break, bottom of the hour, all that nonsense, I was just thinking about, you know, the Roe thing, how it's such a tip of the iceberg situation, man, you know, I mean, Roe is involved in everything, straight back to the stolen election of 2000.
Well, it absolutely, all of this is interconnected because it's the same players, you know, in all of the scandals, you know. So it's more of a I think. Go ahead.
I was just saying, you know, I mean, he's always been the puppet master of the whole thing. I mean, you go back to the 2000 election where it was his, you know, he's the one that set up that, you know, fake protest outside the doors saying, you know, stop the count, which, again, it's another one of these back asswards kind of opposite world things, you know, stop counting the votes. And people backed this, you know,
the Supreme Court backed it too, which, you know, the Supreme Court said stop counting the vote because if you count them any longer, it will irreparably harm the conservative candidate, which means
because he was illegitimate. That whole episode still, you know, just makes me so angry that we let the Supreme Court decide who the president was as opposed to actually finding out who won. You know, I mean, how pathetic is that? And we're still acting as though it never happened for the most part.
I know. It's, insanity. John, complete insanity.
You know, so, like, you know, are we only going to be able to face this once we take this key, you know, Michelin man, sweaty bag of warm dookie down and finally get to look into all the nastiness that he's been up to, you know? You know, he was relieved of some of his duties, so that definitely had to be a sign that, you know, trying to separate him from his position a little bit in preparation for the fact that I think they knew it was inevitable he was going to go down.
Yeah. Well, it's just, you know, it's with any of these characters, it's just a matter of time. I mean, you know, they have done so much, and I think it's been really incredible that the what does the old saying go? If you want to hide something, if you really want to hide something, hide it out in front of everybody, you know? And I can't help but think that the majority of these crimes that these guys have committed have been exactly just that. It's like, well, if we just do it as brazenly as possible and act like we don't give a damn, then people will, you know, they'll just go, well, what do we do? I mean, you know, what do we do with these folks? True enough, they have all the houses of government. So the only real way to try to there's only a couple ways I see to try to bring him down. First way is through Fitzgerald, and that's a long shot. And the second way is to, you know, elect a Democratic Congress to try to hold these folks to account. either through the impeachment process or, you know, through enacting special prosecutors to try to figure out what exactly happened. Of course, that'll take a couple of years. By the time they figure out what happened, you know, he'll be out of office. But
you know, I mean, our government normally has, you know, processes in place, you know, that have check and balance, you forego, I hate even saying that, forego stolen elections and everything else, is, sorry, it just gets me so crazy, you know, I'm serious, man. You know, I told you before we started, you know, I didn't have a real great night's sleep last night. So, like, I feel like I'm kind of pulling at straws here. And I've got this article up in front of me from CNN.com that I think Bob sent into the production chat. And he's saying that, you know, no one's really covering the Roe thing, as you said before. It's more about Cheney. And here at CNN.com in their law center, they say that notes that Vice President Dick Cheney wrote on a newspaper article might help explain a motive in the perjury and obstruction case on Cheney's former chief of staff, Scooter Libby, according to documents filed by the prosecutor of the case. So, I mean, they're definitely going after Cheney, and I guess they're trying to – the big thing is that the only reason that this happened was to try and discredit the truth.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, I think it's gonna have to be, you know, I don't want Rove to get a deal, but Rove is the linchpin. That's all I can say. You know, finally serving him might be the kick in the door that we finally need to get things happening and get some of these people out of there. You know, I mean, they're just we know they're crooks.
Yeah. We do know that.
Yeah.
It's just oh my God, you did your little scream. I may do mine before the show is over with too, John.
I'm really feeling lost for words. I'm sorry to be so blabbery, but you know, like it's this painful thing that we have. Okay, a pretty good confirmed leak that this is about to go down, and it's just like I want Monday, you know. And please scream. You know what? It feels good, Bruce.
Yeah, but I got a house full of. I have people sleeping in the studio tonight. Oh my goodness! But you know what? I may do it. I may do it before the night is over with. I'm trying to ride this happy wave, hoping that the end of this will see Karl Rove, you know, going to jail. At least to get arraigned anyway, or, you know, going to put, you know, be fingerprinted and all that other good stuff that you have to be if you're indicted, right? I want to see his face on the cover of the Smoking Gun.
Well, I have a feeling we'll be seeing some really good.
I was going to say, if anyone's not aware of that website, thesmokinggun.com. They get all of these celebrities and political figures, their dirty laundry, and they hang it out there for the world to see. So if you want to know where to find the first pictures of Karl Rove's mugshots, that'll be the place to go. Let's hope that we'll have a picture on the Smoking Gun by Friday, eh?
Yeah, a mugshot will just be a wonderful thing. It'll be a wonderful thing.
I bet he'll
lose some weight in prison. Don't you reckon? Probably be good for him.
Oh,
I know, I'm mean.
Yes,
mean, but I'm sorry. The guy deserves no slack because he's given us none. You know, he's just hacked and chopped at what is right and real, and has just made a mess of the whole thing. But yet, those he serves have profited well. And,
well,
you know, and here's just like Bush referring to the citizens with health care as consumers. We are now supporting the machine. The machine no longer supports us.
Well, you know, the whole Medicare Part D thing that we were going to try to do last week, too. I mean, we talked about that. Tomorrow is the deadline, by the way, for millions of seniors to have made their final choices, and let's hope they're comfortable with their choices, because if they're not, guess what? They have a whole year, I think, before they can make any kind of changes. So, you know, yes, we're going to have seniors who are going to have to make choices between A, eating, and B, having their high blood pressure medication.
Right, and this whole sign-up thing that everybody's being forced to do, I've been hearing some callers on other shows talk about the fact that, you know, there are healthy seniors out there that are having to sign up and buy into this thing even before they might even need prescription drugs themselves, and if they don't sign on now while they're healthy, they may not be able to get into it later. I mean, this just sounds like an insane runaround to avoid helping people at all.
Well, you know, as Ronald Reagan said, the eight words that people, you know, that scared the hell out of people was, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help you," or something like that. This Republican Party has created that as a reality, okay? Everything that this particular government under George Bush, it's like everything that they've done, they have tried to make it be as unnegotiable as possible, so that, you know, so that anything that you, you know, any program that you try to encounter, I mean, from Katrina all the way through to Medicare Part D, going, I mean, we could go back and cite any number of things that they've tampered with. And you know what? I will dare say even as much as grants that are going out to nonprofit institutions, nonprofit organizations, that they have made the process to go about getting government help or to get government funds in any way, shape, or form to be so burdensome and so time-consuming and so confusing that people just give up and they say, you know what, it's not worth it, which is exactly what the Bush administration wants them to do. As Grover Norquist said once, what we need to do is drag, you know, we don't want to completely ruin government. What we want to do is make it small enough to drag it into the bathtub and drown it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, you know, this is a way for them to be able to further justify cutting programs if they make it so difficult for people to take advantage of these programs that there ends up by the end of the year, not everything's been used up, you know. And you know how government budgets go. You have to spend everything you got this year or else you'll get less next year.
Absolutely. So, and, you know, the other part of that, too, is that, you know, just as a really quick aside before we head off to our wonderful break, you know, I don't know if breaks are wonderful or not, but this next one's probably going to be. And that is, you know, and this is something that Tom Hartman was saying a long time ago, and I was saying about the same time. I don't know if we got it from each other or if it was just sort of a one of those thoughts that's out in the stratosphere and it happens to land into two people at the same time. But the idea that people, you know, the idea that a government gets elected, you know, we elect people to govern, right? Now, when we elect these people to govern, one of the first things that we do is we look at them and we try to decide whether or not they are worthy of governing us, right? Well, what has happened is people have turned away from, are these people realistic, you know, people to govern us, or are we voting our beliefs? Are we voting what we think is, you know, does this person share what I believe in, rather than are they capable of governing? And so what's happened as a result is that we, you know, the American people have voted what they believed in rather than what, you know, I don't want to say that because you know what, I really don't know that for sure that these people got elected legitimately, but if they did, you know, if they did, they got elected legitimately from people that voted what they, you know, voted their beliefs rather than, you know, their best interest. And these folks in Washington, D.C. right now have no conception of what it takes to be governing. They are a party that dislikes governing. They are a party, by their own admission, hates government. So if they are a party, by their own admission, that hates government, why are they governing?
Because,
you know, in order
they didn't like what government did. They represent those parts of our society that didn't like the oversight that government was responsible for. So the only way, the best way to get around it is to hijack the system.
Yeah. And that's just it, is that, you know, and then, and as a result, they have turned around and made it by design, so burdensome that no one can really figure out exactly how to deal with it. You know, if a different party ever gets into control in the White House, they're going to have to start over from scratch. With a lot of regulations and with a lot of the departments there, they're going to have to undo. It's going to be incredible, the work that's going to have to happen to undo these last 6 years. You know, and hopefully. Go ahead, John.
There's some tough questions there. How much of what this government did actually stands as being legal? Or, you know, I'm like, how much rolling back? We talked about this like a year ago, I remember, in the Tom Hartman chat. We had a big run on, okay, if we did get all these guys out in a bunch, how much of what they did do we get to just, like, roll back? You know, does suddenly, you know, the clear skies, you know, nonsense and all that, is it all sudden just, you know, like, gone? Is it vapor because they were illegitimate, if we actually get it proved back to that point? But, you know, it's going to be tough no matter what happens, man. And I do believe we're probably way overdue for a break, if I'm not mistaken. So I tell you what, we'll pick this up when we get back. And, you know, it's so widespread. And like we talk about, context is hard to keep. So just hang tight. Got a couple of messages. You're listening to John and Bruce on Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network.
I'm glad you brought that up, Jeff.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's pretty scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get
me. I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about the place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. John Fox down here in Sydney. It's another Saturday night on the Head On Radio Network. Bruce Birch is up there in North Carolina, and I believe Bruce has our Occupation Watch story for this week.
Yes, I do. Thank you, John. You know, We didn't do this last week, and I don't know how it is that we sort of missed it, but I think we just had so many calls that we never quite got to it. But this week we do have our occupation watch, and as we do in every occupation watch, we start off with the human cost of the occupation, the casualties in Iraq. Since the war began on March 19th, 2003, have been 2,437 American military casualties in Iraq. Since mission accomplished, May the 1st, 2003, with, you know, we talked about that a little while ago with Bush giving the mission accomplished speech on the USS Abraham Lincoln, I believe it was. Today, as of today, there's 2,300 dead since he gave that speech, which puts that figure somewhere close to 93% of the people who have died since he declared victory. 93%, something like that. That's just unreal. I'm sorry?
I'm just saying since victory.
Yes.
It's hard to even say it.
It is hard to even that, the official Iraqi civilian count is somewhere between 35,000 and 40,000, but we all know that that is woefully undercounted, and it could be as high as 250,000 from reports that I have read. That number is actually very low, so you know. But nobody's counting those numbers. Nobody knows for sure. Story that I wanted to cover tonight for Occupation Watch, and I want to do this very quickly, is this is about Basra, what's going on in Basra. The governor of the southern Iraqi province of Basra suspended the city's police chief, accusing him of links to groups involved in terrorism. So the guy who is in charge, John, of security in this city is the one who perhaps has been linked to terrorism there. Now, this story also goes on to, let me just read this. Governor Mohammed Musaba al-Wahali said he was also demanding the resignation of the commander of the Iraqi Army's Basra-based 10th Brigade, General Abdul Latif Thaban, saying, quote, he is not cooperating with us and is being loyal to his politics and not the law, unquote. Wiley said the two security chiefs were suspected of links to sabotage groups from outside the city and abroad that are carrying out sabotage and terrorist attacks. Now, the one thing that I wanted to make clear, I read throughout this entire article, he does not, this governor says throughout this entire article, he does not call on Al-Qaeda. He does not call on talk about Shiite or Sunni violence. He says sabotage and terrorist attacks, and calls them sabotage groups. Now, the question that I would have regarding that is, what would constitute these sabotage groups? Now, you and I have talked about stories out of the Russian press that have put sabotage and some of these IEDs and some of these car bombings squarely in the lap of the British and the U.S.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it makes me wonder.
Absolutely, it would have to make you. It has to make you wonder, man, because they're not. You know that. You know any chance they have to link anything to Zarqawi, whether he still walks or not, they would. So you know to somehow disconnect him makes one have to wonder. You know, exactly who was he involved with. It's making me think, I just saw a documentary not last night or night before last on Shanghai during the 20s and 30s. And the chief of police was also like the number one gangster in Shanghai.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, it sounds very similar to me. You know, law enforcement is running the criminal syndicates as well.
Well, and you know, it's interesting in this article, he talks or it's talked about how Shiites and Sunnis are dying, you know, various clerics and politicians are dying, you know. But the crazy part of this is that nobody's taking responsibility for any of these attacks, which is really sort of out of the norm for most groups. Most groups over in the Middle East are proud that they were able to execute some deadly attack. So it's you know, this is sort of like out of the norm. There's too much here that doesn't quite fit the mold, if you know what I mean.
No kidding. No kidding. And you're right. You're making me think, you know, all these, you know, members of the new government that keep getting knocked off. You never actually hear that these are being, you know, any of the usual suspects claim any involvement. So, you know, I mean, it's just nuts. And is this story just going to disappear after just this? You know,
probably so.
We talk about this stuff kind of all the time, but anyway, man, we're hammering right up on the news, I think. So, yeah. Agnes, go ahead and hit that music. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio with a kind of slightly froggy John Fox and Bruce Birch. We'll be back after the news on the Head On Radio Network.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
This week, the country's two labor federations announced a tentative agreement to coordinate get-out-the-vote efforts for the midterm elections in 6 months. While no solid plans have been laid out, a committee will be created and headed by AFL-CIO Political Committee Chair Gerald McEntee and Change to WIN Vice Chair Edgar Romney. The AFL-CIO's Lane Windham explained why there is a need for coordination.
We're going to work together. We're creating a National Labor Coordinating Committee where the unions that are part of the AFL-CIO and the unions that are part of Change to WIN can coordinate efforts, make sure we're not duplicating efforts, and absolutely make sure that we can make workers' voices heard in this election cycle.
On a national level, the AFL-CIO and Change to WIN have had a hard time seeing eye to eye since the split last year. Change to WIN's Carol Florman says the election year coordination between the two federations is a good start.
There has been continued work together and cooperation at the local and the state level. So what's new here is that this is the first time that Change to WIN and the AFL-CIO are collaborating at a national level.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
In his reform bid to replace James Hoffa as president of the Teamsters, Oregon Teamsters official Tom Leadham's grassroots campaign collected 55,000 petition signatures in a little over 4 weeks. At the Detroit Labor Notes conference, Leadham said his campaign is about restoring real worker power. Leadham accuses Hoffa of celebrity business unionism that has failed to deliver strong contracts and pensions for Teamsters.
Picket lines have been replaced with PR. Members and officers are reduced to groupies. We're passive spectators in our own union. This is a complete U-turn from the course the Teamsters took in the 1990s when we broke organized crime's stranglehold on our union and went to work rebuilding Teamster power based on rank and file power.
Leadham has a more complex agenda, but he says It really comes down to this.
We need to keep fighting the boss.
And Leadham says rebuilding worker power on the job is the way to really do that.
Here is today's economic report. What's more American, a Ford Mustang or a Toyota Sienna? If you look under the hood and beyond the name, you might be in for a surprise. New statistics from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and reported in Thursday's Wall Street Journal show that the Sienna, assembled in Indiana, contains 90% North American parts. On the flip side, the Mustang, an American icon, is assembled with 45% of its components coming from abroad.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio for Hour 3. John Fox here in Sydney, Australia. Bruce Birch up in Greensboro, North Carolina on the Head On Radio Network. We are chatting at headonradionetwork.com chat room and streaming at the White Rose Society. And Bruce, through the last couple of weeks, just like we never got to do an occupation watch last week, over the last month, Gene, who rings up, has been, I reckon you've been getting all the emails as well, has been keeping me afloat on what's been happening with this net neutrality stuff, right? And
yes.
And I see that we have Richard on line one. Just hang on tight, Richard and Jim. I just want to mention this. Anyone who's curious can go to dearaol.com/blog. And they've got a little story there called AOL Starts the Shakedown. And it looks like AOL, rather than proudly announce their certified mail service, I love this, certified mail service, have put the switch on on the sly instead. AOL users on Friday were left scratching their heads as a new message on their AOL mail clients, AOL Certified Mail, it announced over a paid-for email message authenticated for your protection. So the pay-for emailing service boat has just left the port. Now, you know, like Gene,
anyway.
And Gene says in the email, he says, you know, if it were just AOL, it wouldn't really bother me, but we know it's not going to stay that way, you know. And I wonder how this will impact people like you and I who actually, you know, have control over domains and use local clients and whatnot. If they're going to be able to do that to us, or is this all people who are just on commercial webmail interfaces? But you know, I'd be kind of curious to see how that would come. You know, how would they be able to charge us with our, you know, systems that we have, as opposed to much more of the public that is running on some sort of Hotmail or AOL or whatever.
Well, and you know, the entire net neutrality situation is one that we're all going to be encountering. You know, AOL, unfortunately, AOL. I certainly hope there's listeners. If you're on AOL, please get off of AOL. Go to something else, for the love of God. You can find chat rooms all over the internet. You don't need to have to stay there to go to 20-something looking for 30-somethings, or whatever it is that you're going to. I mean,
no kidding, man. And I'll tell you what, if under certain situations, maybe we'll just have to get some sort of hornemail.com domain name and start up a listener's email private mail service for everybody. You know, we might just have the power to get around this little one. But anyway, how about we get to the phones, man?
Let's do that. You take it. Bring them in, John.
Okay. I do believe we have Richard on line one. Richard, you there? Welcome to Fourth Estate Radio.
You sure do have Richard on line one. Just a little comment about AOL.
Please.
Here's something interesting that I discovered, was that if a person must use AOL, you know, some people actually have to use it because it's the only way they can get in. Some people, like in strange remote locations, can only get AOL. But you don't have to use the AOL software and get all that advertising and horrible corruption of your system. You can, in fact, use AOL just with a normal web browser.
And like a normal email type client, right?
Exactly. I checked that out with AOL because I had a dear friend who was just hopelessly, you know, entangled in that horrible software that they use. And the other thing, you know, so he didn't know anything about computers, you know, and so I took it upon myself to try to help him. The other comment I've got about AOL, this is funny. I have a friend who was virtually the head of data processing for a major California city. And one day he said to me, and I quote, "The only company I hate more than Microsoft is AOL."
I
sort of think of them in the same way, you know, a company that rapes your computer in the same way as Real Player or QuickTime on a PC. You know, these are horrendous programs. So let me get back.
I was going to say, I have no experience with AOL whatsoever. I have somehow managed to avoid it.
But you know, their
software is.
You can sit down at somebody else's machine because AOL is so ubiquitous, and just play with it and marvel. I mean, it's kind of like I think of them the way I think of the Bush administration. You know, in that they're just putting this stuff over on you, and you're amazed that it takes. that was my feeling. It's like I was feeling so sorry for my poor friend who was struggling with his PC, was just sort of groaning along, barely functional because of the incredible, resource load that their software put on his system. So,
you had something else, though.
Oh, yeah, a couple of things. The first thing I wanted to mention before the break, you were talking about the humongous task of undoing the damage that these neocons have caused. And what occurred to me, you know, I remembered that it really didn't start with W. It started back with a contract with America. I believe we're into the early 90s right now. Remember Newt Gingrich's first 100 days?
Sure do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and they were passing legislation so furiously that nobody even read it. The lobbyists were all writing this stuff. And there we are. So there's incredible
That's
work.
Right. I had actually forgotten about that.
Yeah.
That within that first 100 days, they were just hammering the legislation out so fast that, like, you know, lawmakers on both sides are going, I haven't read a thing.
That's right. And the lobbyists are
kind of like the Patriot Act.
Everything. And it's we don't even know what they did. I mean, who could keep track of all this stuff?
You know, Richard, and what that ended up being actually was a contract on America.
Oh,
I
yeah.
think. But
yeah. Well, I like you guys. The humor.
Hey, man,
it's well received.
It's please. Saturday night. It's Saturday night, man. In amongst everything, we spend so much time just trying to keep some, you know, context on the truth out there.
Yeah.
You know, Bruce and I come out on this thing on Saturday night, and it's just kind of like, okay, we got stuff out there, but, like, you know, it's ridiculous. Let's just really, really put the focus on that. It's absolutely, utterly absurd what's going on. And unfortunately, the defense mechanism is laughter from there.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, really. Well, there's a couple of other things I got here on the plate. Your show from last week didn't get archived. I don't know if you
know. Oh, it didn't?
It came up late, actually. It did come up late. I think I saw the page update, but the archive does exist on the hard drive. If I'm mistaken and it's not on the page, I'll put a link on fourthestateradio.com after the show.
Oh, cool. Okay, so it's the May 6th show, and it's on...
Yes, I've already downloaded it and listened to it myself.
Cool. Okay. Now, here's a topic that's close to my heart, which is Medicare Part D. And the reason why it's close to my heart is that I actually am a managed health care commissioner in my county. And
okay.
I live in Contra Costa County, California, which is almost unique in the United States. Actually, it was unique. It is a county that started its own HMO. So it was the first government entity in the whole country to do that. And I am a consumer of my own HMO. My county sells the HMO over the counter. And so I buy it every month the same way as other people buy Blue Cross, or Kaiser. And being a government agency, it functions democratically. So I became a commissioner, one of about 17 commissioners, and I get the opportunity to help steer that HMO, you know, to help set policy for my own HMO. And it's like it was a no-brainer to do that. So I don't get paid for it, but every 2 months I go to a commission meeting and, participate. And it's, of course, Medicare Part D has come up. We changed our provider. The situation is a little complex because we have our own pharmacy in amongst the health centers, and we also have contracts with a benefits management firm that allows people to go to private pharmacies to get their prescriptions filled, and they're filled at a rate which is negotiated between the county and each individual pharmacy. As well as we have, specific prices for things. So let's say if I need a prescription that's generic, it'll be $10. If it's a brand name, it'll be $25. And if it needs special approval, it's not on the approved drug list, well, then it's going to be 40-60 split. Of course, Medicare Part D came up. And
yeah.
What we decided to do was to do our own Medicare Part D for our members. So that's in the works for next year. And we changed the benefits manager. The company was with us for at least 20 years, I would say. And we went over to another company that had the pegs in place to do a Part D. So we are going to do a Part D that's honest. And believe me, my personal feeling is that the whole Medicare Part D business stinks to holy hell.
Yeah.
I'd like to find out more of how much impact you're able to have. This position that you're in, should we be making sure that we're getting the right people involved in other places in this laterally to try and get a hold of what is
absolutely
a mess?
Absolutely. It's really exciting.
Okay. I tell you what, we're coming up on a break. Can you hold on through the break?
Sure thing.
Okay. Agnes, why don't we go ahead and take this break? Because we've tried to talk about this subject a bit, Bruce, but we haven't really gotten that far, and I think we've got a better inside shot here than we've had yet, aside from your mom, which we lost last week. So we're gonna take this break real quick, and we're gonna be back with our caller and Jim Hangout. We'll be there real soon. This is Bruce and John on Fourth Estate Radio.
New Jersey Turnpike. Registration.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to. A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a... Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg die kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided they can't do that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Alright, everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. That's some old Tool, and there is now new Tool. Go to toolband.com. There's a really, really great little bit of artwork and sample. Oh, it's oh so nice. Anyway, Bruce, we're going to get back to business. We still have Richard on the line. That's where we were. Sorry, man. I got, you know, Tool comes on and the spatial element in my brain goes wandering. Anyway.
This is a hard act to follow, you know, the resident of the United States.
he's the decider. He decides. He makes decisions. He likes to make the decisions about the resurrection egg kits and the holy quadruponic.
And that darky one.
There's another part of that's going to be promo number two, where I ask about the holy 5.1, and that's, there's so much material in there. Anyway, Richard, what I wanted to ask you though is, okay, what I saw a link in our production chat. I think Bruce, is that the organization that Richard's working with?
No. That's not who's working with. But it is another organization. Right. I put a link in there called the website address is called MedicareAdvocacy.org. Are you familiar with this site?
Yeah. No, I don't know it.
Oh, you don't know?
With it.
Okay. Well, it's basically just another website people can go to for get help with Medicare Part D and other.
Good. It's a mess, and the thing, it's very scary, really. Of course, we all know about the part of it where the government is prevented from negotiating for price, and that is such
right.
a travesty.
It really is.
That is an outrage, and we should know who is responsible for putting that in there. And maybe that may be the worst thing in the whole bill. But the
well, it may.
It makes no. It makes absolutely no sense. Even if you were to go by just, you know, good business sense, just, you know, how can you even put that kind of provision into a public into a public health care set of legislation? But
because you want to,
you said that. Oh, of course. So you were saying that you want to work to try and make Part D work. Is it something that can be made to work, or
what? Sorry.
Is it something that can be made to work, or does it have to be scrapped?
It should be scrapped, but the thing is that because it's where things are at right now, I mean, in other words, it's the only game in town. Within my system, we can make it work for the benefit of our members as opposed to for the benefit of the company, because Medicare Part D, in almost every case, is being administered by companies which I consider fly-by-night, and they can change the terms on the consumer at any time they want to.
That's exactly what I've come to understand. Okay, so
we can cover these drugs, but we're not going to cover these other drugs. And next month it's going to be different, and the prices they can juggle. And you know, it's like the consumer is really screwed.
Well, and I'm tired of hearing it actually being using the term consumer. This is healthcare.
Yeah,
these are people.
Sorry.
This is healthcare.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And see,
yes,
this is all part of that, you know, message garbage that they do so well. Now, you're obviously closer to it than most people. Is there any central resource or anything involved with this board or whatever that you're doing that people can go to, or you can email us some information that maybe we can get some people?
No, there's nothing. There's nothing on. It's simply, this is the Contra Costa Health Plan is what it's called.
And, it's all just with your particular plan.
What's that? Yeah.
It's all just you.
That's correct. Yeah. And what I'm talking about is what's in the pipeline for next year. So it doesn't exist yet. We don't do Medicare Part D now. But we're setting it up for fiscal 2007.
Right.
And the whole idea is to get all the ducks in a row so that our members have very secure, dependable resources within. So we're going to do it right.
I've got you now. So, like, you best of luck to you. It sounds like you have found maybe a possible way to at least deal with the reality, which is people's making sure people get what they need.
Yeah, under the rotten system that, you know, making sure that they get the best that we can do, and that they get something that they can rely on.
Right.
Well, the most appalling.
There's no profit motive in this. It's gone. And that's the beautiful part about it, you know. I mean, about the whole operation. The profit motive's gone. And
yeah.
The doctors we have, for instance, are people who are dedicated to public health medicine. They want
that's
to be there.
Point.
And
you're where, Richard?
What's that?
I said, and you're where? Because I think I want to move there.
Oh, I fear.
He doesn't want to tell me.
I fear moving somewhere else, you know, because I see how this can work, and I realize that, you know, you're running a radio program and you're on a schedule. So the whole topic of how this health plan came to be is very interesting, but it's a whole story in itself. It takes a little time. So
we might just have to have you back on with a little bit of a scheduled effort. You can tell us some of that story.
Yeah,
Richard, you can always call in tomorrow night to my radio program that I do, and we can talk about it at length.
Okay, I'll see if I can do it. The point I'm trying to make is that I would like to be inspirational to other people because we did it here in this county, and it can be done elsewhere, too. And that's what I think the story will be inspirational about. People can do it. We have the closest thing to single-payer health coverage in the whole United States right here.
Well, we need to
wow.
find out what that is and replicate it.
Yeah, and I have to say, of course, that the whatever I've said here represents my own opinions and not
sure.
officially that of the Contra Costa Health Plan or the Managed Care Commission.
Right.
Sorry, I've got to say that legally.
Well, and
that's
fine. What can you say? What can you say illegally? Okay, I'm just playing.
Well, anything I want to, I guess at this point. But sure,
but you know,
I mean, I have feelings about this, you know.
Sure.
Because I see it from the inside and the outside, and there are certain things that are just so maddening. We are facing increasing pharmaceutical costs that are unbelievable. They happen to be escalating at about 33% a year across the board. So, and when the brand names go up by a third, their generics go up at the same rate.
Sure.
So this is one of the things that put us into a financial pickle. And the other, of course, is that the Republicans have strangled our budgets. And we're doing...
Well, I think the real tragedy behind all of this is, I mean, you know, now, you know, the Department of Veteran Affairs has the unique ability to negotiate high volume contracts with the drug companies.
Yes.
Medicare Part D, the entire law was written so that they were, so that, you know, they are unable to do that.
I know that.
And it's just a total pharmaceutical giveaway to the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, this law was written, I think, you know, I could be way wrong, but I'm thinking it was written by the lobbyists themselves.
I think so, you know. It's as I see it, it's continuation of this, as you guys call it, opposite world strategy.
Yeah.
you know what I'm saying? It's like they'll tackle something to derail it, and then they'll give it a fancy name. You know, like clear skies.
Sure. Or healthy forests.
Healthy forests, yes.
You know, yeah.
So here it's, you know, we're going to cover everybody, and it's going to be pie in the sky, and of course, it's not.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Richard, thank you for calling in to Fourth Estate Radio tonight, and I really hope you can give me a call tomorrow night. We can talk more at length about this. It'd be, I think this is a great topic to cover on Mother's Day, right?
Yeah. Sounds good. Okay.
Well, all right. Have a great evening, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Okay. Great.
Thanks, mate.
Bye.
Thanks a lot. We are going into a break here, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to Fourth Estate Radio. If you'd like to get in on the radio program, you can dial 1-877-443-2366 if you have a rotary phone. If you don't, just punch it out. We'll be right back.
Yeah, it goes away. All of this and more of nothing in my
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know... One small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
In the beginning, there was dirt, water, and air.
And it was good. Once.
Planet Jack.
With gas prices skyrocketing at the pump, there is a cheap, renewable alternative fuel.
Rudolph Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago.
A diesel engine that runs on used vegetable oil?
We get the used vegetable oil from fast food restaurants.
It's called biodiesel.
I got a biodiesel van.
Joshua Tickle, author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, explains.
Biodiesel is a clean-burning diesel fuel that's actually made from vegetable oil. It's usable in any diesel engine. You don't have to modify the engine. You just pour biodiesel right into it.
Pour some veggie fuel into that tank.
The environmental benefits of biodiesel are that it's cleaner, it's healthy for humans, plants, and animals.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Close your eyes for a moment and imagine you're away from it all on a remote, unspoiled beach somewhere. Take a deep breath and enjoy the warm sea air. Sunlight streams through the palm trees as gulls call out from above. A real paradise like this isn't easy to come by, but it does still exist. And with your help, places like this one can last forever. You see, the Nature Conservancy works locally with communities, businesses, and people like you to preserve the most precious natural places around the world. They protect the animals that live there, the plants that grow there, and even the water. That way, this beautiful place will be beautiful forever. And we'll make sure that closing your eyes will never be the only way to get there. I'm Paul Newman. Help the Nature Conservancy save the last great places.
Visit the Nature Conservancy at nature.org. That's nature.org.
Well, my baby, she don't want me around.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio. John Fox, as usual, down in Sydney, Australia, upside down, can't tell time, whatever. And Bruce Birch up in North Carolina. How you going, Bruce?
I'm doing great, man. I've never accused you of not being able to tell time.
No, that was for the proletariat in the
Le proletariat. Oh, yes. Apostolos. Yeah, Apostolos or whatever the hell his name. I don't know. It was a crazy-ass Greek thing, man. I don't know. He's not in there tonight, so we can talk about him, right?
Oh, no. Oh, that's right. He tends to miss this live. That's right. And so whenever I try and push his buttons on air, I'm always missing him. I forget that. Anyway, where were we?
Oh, I think we have we have a caller on the line that we need to bring into the radio program.
Jim, thanks for holding on there, man. Jim, you still hanging on there, man? By the ends of your fingernails.
Yeah, they're squeaking a lot. You know, that's okay. Don't worry about it, you know. I've got
thanks
blow up
thanks
doll.
For holding on.
My blow-up doll filled with helium tonight, so she'll keep me up, okay? You know, did you ever see that movie called Showgirls?
I actually missed that intentionally. Sorry, but go ahead.
So, Bette Midler said about that, that's the worst thing that happened to the pole since World War II. And when I think of H.R. 1 that enabled the legislation that provided for Part D of Medicare, you got it. There's a direct correlation between the two. I mean, when that, the night when they put that legislation through Congress, I just wondered, which members of the five families did they import from New York to get it through? John Gotti Jr.?
Well, I mean, it was all part of the K Street project. I mean, it's pretty well documented. You know, pharmaceutical lobby wrote it. I haven't myself, but everything I've heard about it has said, you know, and if you look at what the implications seem to be, you know, that it's obviously all just for the profiteering of the pharmaceutical companies. You can't read it any other way.
My point exactly. I mean, it's like, you know, you have the mafia controlling the pharmaceutical distribution and what they will dispense to the people who are at the mercy of this legislation and how they got it through that night. I mean, they should have picked April 30th, Witches Night, to get it through because they had to practically threaten one man's career and his son's career, remember? I mean, it was almost criminal.
We've already known that there's been bribery on the floor with this administration to get legislation through. So, I mean, I wouldn't
I don't put anything past these people. It does play more out, you know, it plays out like The Sopranos.
Well, I mean, you know, or something like, you know, Hitler getting something passed before, through the Reichstag before he dissolved it. But nonetheless, you know, it's just some of the stuff they've done to the healthcare system in this country. I mean, it's just incredible. They take away the government's right or ability to bargain collectively for drugs the way the VA had, you know, had done, okay? And basically, once you sign off on that thing, it's, you know, you have written your name in concrete with a pen of iron. You can't change it. And they have people who call you and who represent themselves as being members of the Social Security Administration to intimidate people. I mean, they've called me. And, you know, I just basically, well, what I told them, I can't say on the air, but, you know, they left the phone real quickly. And, you know, thank God I was able to carry my retirement, you know, as a federal employee, and, you know, I mean, my health care plan into retirement with me. But, I mean, it's just horrible the way they're trying to basically pressure people into signing up for these drug companies. Now, I received a letter from my congressman today, and he said he was trying to get it to the deadline extended for signing up. It's supposed to be Monday, right? He's trying to get that extended to, like, June of 2007. But who knows where that's going to go. Bush says people don't need no more time to sign up. They need to sign up now. I mean,
it makes no sense to me how you know, well, I mean, it makes sense for profiteering reasons only by locking these people into something. You know, I mean, healthcare is not something that is set in, you know, that you sign up for this type of type of health for the rest of your life and you're able to manage it. It's got to, you know, it has to be dynamic in some way, doesn't it?
The dynamics are simply this. They're rationing health care. They're rationing medication. And if you don't have the money to pay for it, then, you know, you are out of luck. That's exactly their position on it. And, you know, when I look at these and the profits they're making on this and the profit motive, I mean, I don't see anything wrong with the profit motive, but, I mean, there's a limit to it. And I say this generally to the neocons and their profiteering people on K Street and the money that they're making. I mean, how many more houses can you live in? How many more cars can you drive? How much better can you eat? I mean, how much more can you consume before you die? That's what I don't understand.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And I'm kind of interested to hear more from Richard because he seems to maybe have found a way without buying into the thing at all of maybe finding a way to make it work in current circumstances. So maybe this is where until we can get rid of this legislation, we might have to go. So, Jim, we're getting close to the end of the show, and we actually have like three or four more people on hold. So we're gonna go ahead and. Yeah, we're getting up close, and everybody decided to ring up at the end. So, what can you do? So, thanks for ringing in, man, and we'll probably speak to you next week. I could almost bet money on.
Let's hope. Good night. God bless.
All right, you too, man. Have a great night. And I do believe we have Union Man Wayne on the line. You there, Wayne?
Yeah, I am. You guys have.
Hey, good day, mate. Welcome.
You guys have managed to keep me up past my bedtime again. I want you to know that's a good thing.
that's a good thing, right, Wayne?
I don't know. But listen, to add to Jim, you know, another thing about this is remember that Medicare or Medicaid, whichever program this is under, is not allowed to negotiate bulk prices, which means those prescription drugs are costing anywhere from 3 to 4 times as much as the Veteran Administration pays for the same drugs. And that was put into legislation. that they cannot negotiate bulk prices. And who does that benefit?
Well,
the pharmaceutical companies that put Bush in office to begin with.
Exactly.
So, but listen,
well,
I know there's
unfortunate
a lot of people making. I'm sorry I keep interrupting you.
Go ahead, Wayne.
On the message board about dreaming about what we can do if the Democrats take over control of Congress. And one of them is to pass the Employees Free Choice Act. And very simply, what that does is eliminate NLRB elections. If a union organizer goes to a workplace and gets 51% of the people to sign an authorization card, that company has to sit down and negotiate a contract with the union. And if they do not come to a decision, I believe it's in within 90 days, then it goes to, I don't know, I forget the exact word, but, you know, it goes to more further negotiations, then after 30 days, it goes to binding arbitration. And that would increase union membership threefold, fourfold. I mean, it would be the greatest thing that ever happened to this country. We need that very
Wayne, is there a website?
Pardon me?
Is there a website that details that that act?
AFL-CIO does. If you Google Employees Free Choice Act, it was introduced by Senator Kennedy. Couple 3 years ago. There are now over 200 sponsors between the House and Senate. And like I say, if the Democrats take over control of Congress, and, you know, well, especially if they take both houses, then we get to hold their feet to the fire and tell them this has got to be passed. You know, so I'm gonna get off so you guys could take a couple more people before you go away.
Well, thanks, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks, Wayne, for that. And I will do some research on that. Maybe you and I will have another conversation about that in the very near future.
Well, maybe I'll give you a call tomorrow night, man.
There you go.
All right,
man.
Brother.
Have a great night,
gentlemen.
Right on, you too, man. You can go to bed soon.
After you're done.
It's only about 15 minutes left, man.
I think I can make it.
All right.
Bye.
And talk, man.
Let's see. Who else was on the line, John?
Did I hear Bob was on the line? Bob, you there?
Some guy named Bob the Blow Up Boy?
Yeah, that would be me.
Top of the evening, mate.
Carl Rove sleeps with the perches. Now,
you sound like
guy,
you might have a.
I have an entirely self-centered reason for calling in at this late hour.
Okay.
Okay.
Because it's officially Mother's Day now.
It is indeed.
Right.
And, to be quite honest, I'm down here in the last little toe hills of the Appalachians in northwest Alabama. And I'm far, far, far away from my beloved wife, Agnes, and our children. And Mother's Day is upon us. And I didn't send flowers. I thought I would wait until this point in time because I knew she'd be listening. And just wish her the happiest Mother's Day she could possibly have. And tell her how much that I wish I was there. And how much I appreciate the incredible yeoman job that she has done. Let's remember for a moment, and you guys know, and most of the listeners know, I came to this dream of the Head On Radio Network because I had been in radio in the past. I love radio. She didn't. she has jumped into this with all of the vim and vigor of the unsinkable Molly Brown. And I am so proud of her. And John, you know from the work that you have put in with her how dedicated she has been to this.
Oh, yeah. She's been there every time I've just rung up and said, okay, we need to do this. And she's been right there the entire time. And you know, you've turned our producer into a slobbery mess over there in West Virginia at the moment. But no, man, it's been pretty incredible for the fact that, you know, someone you've basically dragged in and said, here, welcome to this world. And she's done just a hell of a job. It's been great, and she deserves big kudos.
You know what's amazing out of all this, guys? It's the same kind of heart and the same kind of passion and the same kind of dedication that she has thrown in for the last 18 years to raising the children. And she is amazing. And I'm just
you're lucky man,
damn
Bob.
Proud.
You're lucky
just
man.
Just the damn proud. And so that's the Mother's Day speech. you guys have covered so much ground tonight.
I've been lost all night, man.
No, this is the promotional portion of the program, as far as I'm concerned. Greensboro, North Carolina, Sydney, Australia. You put together an amazing show once a week, and you pour your heart and your soul into it. And you make—I just want to say how proud I am of you. Not that me being proud of you is anything in particular special, but it's great to have partners in this dream. Agnes and me, and you two. I feel like it's an unstoppable force. And when I listen to a show like what tonight was, I know that this is only going to continue upward and onward, and that we're going to build that community you keep talking about, Bruce.
Yeah. That's what it is, man.
You know, it gets tough. And
you're going to make me cry, Bob.
Bob, I
love you, Bob.
We love you, man.
Oh my
just
God.
I can't do it.
I lost control of the show officially.
But honest to God, you know, I've been mentioning on the show for the last several nights, especially, you know, because it's worked lately. That John, you're the, you know, Jesus, you know, you earned it, man. You're the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network, and you know, by day mild mannered engineer, by night wild eyed radio host.
And he did it from 30,000 miles away. I mean, God.
You know, I guess this is just a little reality gut check. Look at what we're doing, guys.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And chimed in the production chat via webcam, no less, which is actually kind of interesting. You know, I spent 3 hours on webcam with Agnes, and all I saw was gear. I never saw any people. All I saw was gear.
Well, you know, I don't even get the gear. I mean, she won't webcam for me. You know, you're privileged people. Now, I didn't mean to steal your out or anything, guys. But I wanted to say some kind words about Agnes because, It's a hell of a job up there in the home studios when we're both there. And the way she has handled all of this is simply amazing. And she, and that's the way it is. I mean, John, you know, you've worked arena shows and stuff like that. The tech crowd never gets the big hand that they deserve.
Ah, yeah, and you know, and you know, there's that aspect. I was an operator for years. You know, I can put myself right where Agnes is, and when the technology's not playing ball the way it's supposed to, you really are just on the short end of a really, really naff stick. It's not fun. It's not fun at all. And you know, sometimes you just gotta, you know, have a bit of a powwow in a tech session, and it's amazing what we were able to pull off in a couple of days.
It is. It's absolutely amazing, and that's what makes me absolutely convinced that the Head On Radio Network, from where, you know, Head On re-premiered on October 24th, 2005. By January, you guys were on board. Is there any radio conglomeration, network, whatever you want to call it, television, anybody that has ever grown that fast? I don't think so.
No, and it's like you keep saying, it is really grassroots too. You know, there's no one's conceptualized these shows ahead of time and then gotten hired producers in which to then cast the talent for the formulaized show. These shows have come out of real desires to communicate. What are you guys laughing at?
I'm laughing because maybe there is a grand producer, but I'm not going to say who that or what that entity may be. I will say, though, that you know, I don't think anyone, Don, and this is just, you know, again, here we go with the blubbery stuff. I don't think anyone could have imagined that Fourth Estate Radio would have become what it is today back in October, November, when you and I first started having conversations about this whole thing. So, you know,
yeah.
Man, I mean, I think, you know, if we're going to do a kudos thing tonight, man, thank you. So, yeah, for everything you've done.
No worries.
My butt kicking and screaming.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, the early days, it was work too, man. That pre-produced show in the early days before we got proficient, and, you know, we've gotten better because of the experience and what we've had, you know, Bob rub off on us, you know. He's got actual journo experience that you and I don't have. And, you know, so, I mean, it's when I first met you, you were doing all things all on your own, and I'm just sitting there going, "This is what I want to do, man." I said, you know, and you actually got me started again. So I mean, it's all symbiotic when you look at it.
And you know what? And we're hearing from the chat room; they want us to go another hour tonight. Shall we?
I don't want to. Frankly, I mean, it's not my call, but. I'm guessing Agnes needs some rest. I mean,
I think so too.
She's saying no.
And folks don't necessarily understand, guys. We're to a certain extent, you know, we're inventing this as we go along. We've had the kindness of a couple of wonderful benefactors in all of this. But a lot of this stuff still does have to be figured out, and she spent a bunch of time figuring it out. I'd like her to be, you know, coherent, because I know what our kids will do. Sometime around sunrise, because, you know, that's when kids get out of bed. They'll come in singing Happy Mother's Day with a bowl of Rice Krispies and some orange juice. And unless she gets to go to sleep, Agnes is going to sit up and, you know, why, and she's still going to do that anyway. Oh, I love Rice Krispies. And she'll really sound like she means it. And, you know, a very happy Mother's Day to your beloved esposa as well, Bruce.
Yes.
Well. And she's going to have a happy mother. The kids are going to make, they're making breakfast. They're going to do pancakes and a smoothie.
They're probably doing it now. That's the problem.
No.
That's the way it is around our place, Mother's Day.
Thank you, guys.
Oh.
I love you too, honey.
Love you what?
I'm sorry, I don't usually break in, but see, now you got Agnes crying, and that's horrible.
Well, the last little note out of all of this that should be born in memory, guys, is that Mother's Day is said to have originated in Grafton, West Virginia.
No, really?
although there were rumblings of Mother's Day as far back as the Civil War, in the form of mothers demanding that their babies be brought home before they could be chewed up in the meat grinder of a horrible war.
Yes. Thank you for reminding everyone of that.
Mother's Day was born because mothers love their children. And they she's Mother's Day personified to me right now.
I think you're right. I think you're right, mate. And I think we got to wrap this up. So you want to help us with the housework?
Oh, sure. my lovely wife, Agnes, mother of Margaret, mother of Laura, mother of Sarah, mother of Ferg, produced the show tonight. Let's see. Nobody announced. John Fox is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Peter Godbold makes all the bits and bytes go where they need to go. We'd be lost without him. More than anything, though, we would be lost without the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Thousands in their membership get up every day and go to work and build the American dream. And by supporting the Head On Radio Network, they help save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR. It's all for you.